get rid of this right here, if you don't mind. Hello, everybody. My name's Philip Waters, and I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. Thank you so much for inviting me to come down here. What a privilege it is to be with you this afternoon. Before I get too far along, first thing I want to do is speak to UAAs just a second. I want to thank you for being in our meeting this afternoon. It really means a lot to me that you would take the time to come to our meeting. It means a whole lot to me for you to be here. I also want to thank you for giving me the solution to a problem that I didn't know I had. See, in 1951, when Al-Anon started, we asked you if we could use your 12 steps, and you said absolutely. And from that day to this, those 12 steps have changed thousands of people's lives, including my own. So I want to thank you for that. Because when I got here, I really wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do. See, because I had tried everything there was to try. I'd done everything there was to do, and none of that worked. Now, I'm going to tell you, I wasn't raised that way. I wasn't really sure exactly how it was that I found myself in an Al-Anon meeting on May the 4th, 1994, because when I was growing up, there was no drinking in our house. The closest we came to drinking was when my mother made a rum cake, you know, or she'd make the fruitcake cookies. You know, that was as close to drinking as there was in my house. You know, I grew up in the church. I went to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night. My best friend growing up was the preacher's son. I probably spent as much time at the preacher's house as I did at my own house. I went to a private Christian high school. We had Bible class every day and a chapel every week. When I graduated from high school, I went to Europe, and I spent 9 months at a Bible school over there studying the Bible, 6 or 7 hours a day. And see, I knew a whole lot about God. But yet there was something inside of me that just didn't seem exactly right. Now, I didn't know what that was, and I didn't know why that was. I just knew that the way the people around me looked wasn't how I felt. And I couldn't live up to the way I thought I was supposed to. Now, it's not that I don't think they taught me right. What I think is that I didn't hear it right. You know, I always thought I was less than. I always thought that there was something wrong with me. I have two brothers younger than me and one sister that's 8 years older than I am. When I was little bitty, all three of us boys, we stayed in one bedroom. My sister had her own room, and I would very oftentimes go into her room to escape them and cry myself to sleep because I thought I was no good. That's what I thought. That's what I really thought. I thought I was no good, even as a little bitty baby. And I wanted to be a good man. That's what I wanted to be. I really did. And what I heard the church tell me was that if I was to come down front and confess my sin and pray God that he would take me and use me, that I'd get on my knees one way and wake up another way. The problem is I went down front and I did that. And I got down on my knees one way and I got up the same way. And I thought, well, it's not that I didn't think that God was good, that God couldn't do it, or that God wouldn't do it. I felt like that I was missing something, that there was something that I wasn't quite getting. And I wasn't sure what that was. I just knew that I wasn't getting it. And no matter how hard I tried, I always thought the things that I thought. And I wound up doing a lot of the things that I did that I knew were wrong. And eventually I decided, well, this is just not going to work. Now, I started out pretty good. You know, when I got back from Europe to my uncle, got me a job with Alabama Power Company. Now, this was in 1978. I made $4 and a half an hour. About 6 months later, I was making $6 an hour. 6 months after that, I was making $8 and a half an hour as an apprentice mechanic. I know today that had I stayed there, I would be retired today. I'm still not quite over that resentment. But see, I did what I started doing something that my sponsor today still won't let me do. I started thinking. And I thought, you know, this, when I worked for Power Company, it was a union job. And the advancements that I made wasn't based on how good a job I did. It was based on what the contract said. It was based on my seniority. So I said to myself, I can do better than this. Now, by that time, I'd been married to number one. That happens to me a lot. I get married a lot. You'll find that out. I got married to number one. Now, number one, she was a Bible school graduate. She was a school teacher. One of the sweetest girls I've ever met in my life. And I told her, I said, you know, this is not... I'm going to do something different because... I think I can do better than this. She said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, you know what I want to do? I want to quit my job. I want to go back to school, and I want to get a rock and roll business. Now, don't ask me where I got that idea, because I didn't know anything about the rock and roll business. I had never in my life ever been to a concert of any kind. When I was in high school, I went across the street to the Woolworths and I bought Three Dog Nights live at the Forum. And when I got it home, my mama made me take it back. Now, I didn't know what the rock and roll business was, but I knew this, that it was the direct opposite of everything that I'd been brought up with. And since none of that worked, I'm thinking that will. Well, I'm going to tell you, the very first rock and roll concert I ever went to, I worked at, and I won't lie to you, I had a good time. I had a really good time. I saw things and heard things I had never heard in my life. And I did some things that I had never done in my life. And I did. I had a really, really, really good time. Here's where I went wrong. I had such a good time that I pretty much put my studies to the side. And all I was studying was the rock and roll business. And I, like I said, I got involved in some things that I knew I shouldn't be involved in. Now, I'm going to set your mind at ease. I am a lot of things, but I'm not an alcoholic. I can take a drink of alcohol, and it don't do to me what it does to the alcoholic. I'm not a drug taker. Let me tell you my experience with drugs. I know that's not a big deal to y'all, or that's not something we ought to be talking in here, but this will tell you a little bit about me. We had a lot of times we'd have these concerts. After the concert, we'd have parties, and that's where I saw and did a lot of things that I shouldn't have seen and shouldn't have done. Well, at one of these parties, I went in the kitchen, and there wasn't nobody there, but there was an ashtray in there with joint in it. So I picked that joint up and I put it in my pocket. And the next day I went home and I went out on my porch and I smoked that joint and I went in there and lay down on the couch and went to sleep, and that's the extent of my drug use. Well, eventually in some of the things that I was doing, I got caught doing something I shouldn't have done, and my wife found out about it, and she did just exactly what anybody would have done. She left me. Well, when she left me, my meal ticket was gone. I couldn't keep going to school because I didn't have a job. I didn't have a place to live, didn't really have a place to go. By that time, my folks were pretty disappointed in me. We'd already started butting heads over some things, obviously. And I really wasn't sure exactly what to do, but I knew this, that I was ready for the next phase. I was primed for the ideal relationship. No job, no place to live, no car, no education, no marketable skill. I don't know why anybody would turn me down. Back then I had hair down here and I had an earring. That was when you had to worry about which side you put your earring in. I had it in the correct ear, by the way. And I went and got my hair cut. And this girl that was cutting my hair, she'd cut my hair before. And we started talking. And we decided we wanted to go out. Well, now, this girl was married to one guy. She was living with another guy. She had two kids. And then she started seeing me. So y'all can tell this was destined to be, I mean, this was going to work out perfect. Now she was one of these people that said and did things I had never seen her done or ever heard of anybody doing. And we fell in lust right away. And I'm going to tell you today that there was not one good thing about that. Not one. Not one. Wasn't long before we started living together, and my folks didn't like it too much, as you can well imagine. And it wasn't long before I found myself really not sure exactly what to do, because I had a lot of guilt. Because I knew what was right and wrong. My mom and daddy taught me the difference between right and wrong. It wasn't that I didn't know. It wasn't that I didn't care. It was that I didn't think it was possible for me. But when I found myself in a situation like I had found myself then, I knew what was right and I knew what was wrong. And I knew that the way I was living was wrong. But see, she had two boys. Two little bitty boys, one newborn and one that was about five. They didn't have a daddy that was worth 15 cents. And it wasn't long when we moved in together that she quit her job. I finally found a job where I was making about $6 an hour. So it was me and her and two kids, $6 an hour, living in government-assisted housing. And I didn't know how to get out of it. Now, she didn't want to, but I talked her into getting married because that's what you do. I'd made a commitment to myself. I'd already failed at one marriage. I'm not going to fail at this one. And we started on 7 years of hell. It started out bad and got worse. I woke up in the morning angry, and I went to bed in an absolute rage every day. See, I didn't know that then, but what I know today was that our whole family at that time was suffering from a disease that neither one of us knew we had, a disease called alcoholism. Now, I could go, back then you could go by the Sam's and get a case of beer for $8. I'd go get a case of beer for $8. I'd come home, drink two or three, and turn around twice, and the rest of them were gone. I didn't know anybody drank like that, but she did. And I said to her, this is going to stop. This is going to stop. We got these two boys. We got a life that we got to build together. And this is going to stop. We can't live like this. I know this is going to be hard to believe. She didn't see it that way. And 7 years later, in a little house that all the walls had holes in them. All the windows had been busted out. I'm a plate thrower and a wall puncher. That's what I do. She met me out in the front yard on a Monday of a Thanksgiving week, and she said, "I've had enough. You got to go." Now, by this time, my folks, they couldn't talk to me. If my mama wanted to talk to me, she had to write me a letter and give it to me because she couldn't speak to me. I had no friends. I did manage to get a job. It's a rotten job. I hated it, but I made enough money to support us. But I had no friends. Everything that I had was wrapped up in that house. By that time, we had four boys. I'd adopted her too. She and I had two. And our life was a complete and utter shambles. You know, and I blamed her. It was her fault. See, I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew that grabbing her by the neck and banging her head on the floor was wrong. I know that was wrong. But I justified that by saying, well, if she hadn't have done that, then I wouldn't have done this. It's her fault, not mine. I was wrong. And I knew I was wrong. And she'd had enough. The next few months, I don't know that I've ever been as alone as I was then. I rented a little one-bedroom apartment, and month to month, not knowing what I was going to do, not knowing how I was going to fix all of this, but knowing that I was alone and I was afraid and I didn't know what to do. Well, it wasn't long because I had moved out and I was not there, or for whatever reason, this is what happens. Those of y'all, y'all know. Our circumstances may be different. The things that happened to us, the specific things that happened to us may be different, but y'all know. Y'all know what happens. Well, it happened to us. It happened to her and it happened to me. It got worse. And I came home one Sunday night and she said, "I can't raise these kids by myself. I can't do it." She got in the car and left. Left me standing in the front yard with a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 13-year-old, and I didn't know what to do. I really didn't know what to do. When we were married, I spent all my time trying to control her. I didn't know these kids. I didn't know what to do with them. But I was left with them. Now what do I do? A few days later, she called me. She said, "Philip, I need some help with my drinking. Do you think you could find me some help?" And I said, "Sure." I didn't know what to do exactly, but I said, "Sure." Well, I went to my employee assistance program at work. They recommended treatment, and that's where we went. And she went in the front door, went downstairs to detox, stayed about a week, went out the back door, and kept drinking. But during that week, one day, I was standing in the lobby of that treatment facility, and on the table there was a pamphlet. Now, I wished I could tell you it was an Al-Anon pamphlet, but it was not. Should have been, but it wasn't. It was a pamphlet for what they call the Affected Family Member Program. Now, I didn't know what that was, but I knew that I was a family member and that I had been affected by something. And I said, "Well, I'm going to do this." And I did. And it turned out to be 10 weeks of some pretty intense stuff. And we did treatment stuff. Those of y'all that have been to a treatment facility, you know what that means. Sitting in each, sitting across one another, staring in each other's eyes. Going out in the woods and jumping off logs. Getting on wires that go out in a V, and you lean up against one another till you fall off. We did all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not really sure exactly how that was supposed to help, but we did it. After I got out of that, I went into what they call aftercare. Now, in aftercare, what you do, at least this is what we did. I'm not going to tell you everybody does this. I can just tell you, well, this is what happened here. We sat in a big circle, and we took turns bellyaching, talking about how bad we had it. I wasn't sure exactly how that's supposed to help either, but that's what we did. I tell you the way it helped me. It helped me realize that I wasn't the only one. See, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one that ever felt this way. I was the only one that ever thought the things that I thought. I was the only one that ever did the things that I did. But I found out in that aftercare program that I was not the only one. The sad part was that none of them people in there, didn't know what to do either. But we were in it together. And we took turns swapping stories about how bad we had it. Well, here's the good news. The facilitator of that particular aftercare meeting had been in Al-Anon for 11 years. One day, we met on Thursday nights. One Thursday night, I went in there. Got to be my turn. I started bellyaching. She looked at me. She said, "Philip, sounds to me like your life's been affected by alcoholism. You might want to try Al-Anon." I said, "No." I said, "Look, I got a full-time job. I got four boys to raise. I come here every Thursday night. I don't have time for an Al-Anon meeting. Besides, I had been to one of your meetings, and it was a bunch of blue-haired old ladies that I had nothing in common with, and I didn't want any part of it." And she said, "Well, if what you're doing is working, then you just keep right on." Next Thursday, I'd go back, same thing. Sit in a big circle, bellyache and moan. She'd look at me, she'd say, "Fella, sounds to me like your life's been affected by alcoholism. You might want to try Al-Anon." Well, after a few weeks of that, I said, "Okay, I give up, I'll try it." Now, this was in 1994, May of 1994. Now, today in Birmingham, Alabama, that's where I'm from. Today in Birmingham, Alabama, there's probably 30, 35 meetings a week. You can go to a meeting every day, sometimes three or four times a day. Now, I don't know exactly how many meetings they had back then, but I know they had probably had a pretty good bit. I was very, very, God's been good to me. If y'all don't hear nothing else, y'all, I want y'all to know God's been very, very good to me, despite who and what I am. Because there was a lot of Al-Anon meetings back then. And there was an Al-Anon meeting right near where I lived. In fact, if I wanted to, I could have just about walked to that meeting. But I didn't go there. I'm not sure exactly. Well, I do know. God did it. I'm not sure exactly how I heard about this meeting, but there was a little meeting over in Bessemer. It was held in a concrete block building. Sat back off on the side of the road. Tacked on to the left side of that building was a little concrete room, maybe 10 feet wide and 25 feet long, if that long. And I walked in that meeting on a Wednesday night, and this is what I found. I found an old lady in there, a black lady, old enough to be my mama. I found a girl probably 6 or 7 years younger than me. I found a potato chip salesman, and I found a guy that was probably 10 or 15 years older than me. None of these people I had anything in common with, none. But I'd made it down to that meeting, and I was there, so I'm going to stay. Now, I don't know exactly what they said. I don't have a clue. I just know an hour later, I felt better. I can't tell you why. I can't tell you how. I just know that sitting in that meeting, somehow or another, I got to feeling better. So I said to myself, "Self, you need to go back." And that's exactly what I did. The next Wednesday, I went back. And I went to those meetings. And after a little bit, I started hearing some things. And let me tell you what I started hearing. First thing I started hearing was that they loved me. You know how long it's been since somebody told me that they loved me, where I could hear it? Long time. Then they told me they wanted me to come back. They wanted me to come back. When my wife was in a treatment facility, she was there over the weekend. And I went up there to that treatment facility over that weekend, and they had a picnic. And all the family members and everybody come up there. Well, you know what they did? They kicked me off of the property, and they kept her. That don't seem right, does it? They didn't want me there. Yet I came to this Al-Anon meeting. They said, we're glad you're here, and we want you to come back. So that's what I did. I kept going back. Then I noticed I wasn't hearing some things. They didn't tell me, in order for you to come to this meeting, these are the clothes that you got to wear. They didn't say, in order for you to come to this meeting, these are the dues that you got to pay. In order for you to come to this meeting, this is the rule book that you got to follow. They didn't tell me none of that. They just told me, we love you, and we're glad you're here, and we want you to keep coming back. And that's what I did. That's what a lot of people do. They keep coming back. They get to feeling better. And they're satisfied with that. They come, they sit in a meeting. They get to feeling a little bit better, and that's all they want. But I'm going to tell you, that's not all I want. I want everything. I want everything that this program has to give me. I want 110% of it. Now, back then, I didn't know what that was. I really didn't. I just knew I felt better. And then one Wednesday night, they did it. They always do it. You don't. Not everybody hears it. But see, God was working in my life despite who and what I was. And I heard it. They had this meeting on a Wednesday night on the ninth step. Well, I ain't doing a ninth step. We read the meeting. We read the steps every meeting. We read them today. We read the steps every meeting. So I knew what they said. And I was willing to, you know, go along with three or four of them. But I was not doing a step nine. See, now, I know what I did. And I already told you whose fault that was. That was her fault. But I also, I'm a lot of things, but I'm not 100% stupid. I knew that I held some responsibility in that. I knew that what I'd done, some of the things that I'd done was wrong. I knew it. And I wasn't doing a ninth step. And about halfway through the meeting, this fellow was sitting over there. I can see him yet. I can see him right now. Now, I'm going to tell you about our meeting at home. We chaired a meeting three times. Back then, the Bessemer group had a meeting on Wednesday during the day. They had a meeting on Wednesday night, and they had a meeting on Thursday night. Well, them other two meetings, they wanted their chairs in a row like that so they could sit all facing one way. Well, us on Wednesday night, we didn't want to do that. We wanted to set our meet. We wanted to sit in a circle. So every Wednesday night, guess what we did? We got there early. And we set that meeting up in a circle. So we chaired the meeting. That's the first time. Then we had the meeting. Whoever had the meeting, they chaired the meeting on whatever topic we were going to have. So that was the second time. Then after the meeting was over, we set them chairs back up in a row, so we chaired the meeting third time. So I can remember like it was yesterday, exactly where I was sitting and exactly where that man was sitting. And he says to me, let me tell you something. Well, that's pretty presumptuous on my part. I won't say that he said it to me. He said it in the meeting. He said, let me tell you all about the ninth step. He said, if you want to do a good ninth step, you do a good eighth step. You do a good eighth step, step nine ain't going to be no problem. He said, now, here's the thing about an eighth step. If you want to do a good eighth step, you do a good seventh step. You do seven, eight, nine is not going to be a problem. His point was that there was eight other steps before I ever got to step nine. So I was jumping way ahead. I do that. Now, I don't know if prior to that meeting they had talked about sponsorship. I can't honestly tell you if they have, because like I said, I don't remember a whole lot. Because I come in there mad, angry, very angry, pointing a finger at her. So I had a hard time just hearing that y'all love me. It was hard enough for me to hear that, much less anything else. But I went to that meeting 20 years. And over the course of that 20 years, just about every meeting, we talked about sponsorship. So I'm pretty confident they had talked about sponsorship. But by the time that meeting was over, I knew that I had to make a choice. I knew I either had to work those steps or I had to quit coming. And I didn't want to quit coming. I knew that was the only thing I could do. Because I couldn't sit in a meeting where they talked about the solution to my problem and not do anything about it. I couldn't do that. So after that meeting, I went up to that man. I said, "Bo, I said, I don't really know what this means. And I don't really know exactly what I'm thinking to get myself into. I said, but I need some help working these steps. I said, will you help me?" Now, I didn't know I was asking him to be my sponsor. I didn't know that. I just knew that they had something I didn't have. And I also knew enough about what y'all were doing that I wasn't getting everything that y'all had. I knew that. And I knew I wanted it all. So I asked him, I said, "Bo, will you help me work these steps?" He asked me the most important question I've ever been asked before or since. He said, "Are you willing?" I said, "Yes, sir, I am. I'll do whatever it is that you'd have me do." I didn't know what that was. I just knew. This is what I knew. I knew that everything that I had done had not worked. I'd been to the psychiatrist. I'd been to the psychologist. I had the preacher come to my house twice a week. I'd been locked up in the psychiatric ward. I had taken Prozac. I had done all of those things. None of that worked. Not none of it. So I knew that what I had been doing wasn't working. I was at the end of my rope. I was at the end of the line. So I asked him. And let me tell you what he did for me. He said, "My office is not too far from here." He said, "I want you to meet me at my office at 5:00 on Tuesday afternoon. And we're going to start." And he said, "We ain't going to play. We're not going to fiddle fart around with it. We're going to start at step 1, and we're going to go to step 12. And we ain't going to stop. We're going to take as long as we need to take, but we're not going to spend 4 or 5 years doing this. We're going to start, and we're going to go till we finish." Now, he said, "At any time during this process, if you decide that you don't want to finish, you just let me know, and that'll be the end of it." He said, "But as long as I'm sponsoring you, this is what we're going to do." And I said, "Yes, sir. That's exactly what I'll do, whatever you want me to do." And let me tell you something. This man's life changed. I mean, my life changed. Now, my circumstances didn't change. My circumstances sucked really bad. I had a rotten job with a rotten boss, rotten kids, in a rotten house. My attitude was rotten. My thinking was rotten. Basically, I was a rotten guy. But he took me by the hand into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And right out of that book, I worked those steps and my life changed. completely, totally, 100% changed. I've been the same. I've not been the same. Now, I told you my circumstances didn't change for a long time. Didn't change for a long time. I'm so grateful for my sponsor. I was telling Eddie, or somebody, I don't remember who now, over here in the hospitality room, I was telling myself, I'm so grateful for my sponsor because he took me in. I remember first time, it was in Kentucky somewhere. We went up to one of your roundups. And I'd never been around y'all like that. And I met some of the giants in this program, and I'm so grateful. You know, he took me under my wing, under his wing, and he just loved me. And he guided me. And, you know, he's been my sponsor for 21 and a half years. Almost. And he has yet to tell me. I can count on one hand how many times he's told me what to do. He just don't tell me what to do. But I am so grateful for him and what he's done in my life. Because see, he didn't have to teach me about God. I already told you I knew all about God. That's the way I was raised. But see, what I didn't know was how to have a relationship with God. And that's what my sponsor did for me. That's what he did for me. About 3 years after I came into this program, you know, the alcoholic and I divorced. She went on her way. I had two big fears, by the way. One was that she would not come back, or two, that she would. And I never knew exactly in the beginning what I was afraid of most. But after I got in the steps, and after I got in service, let me tell you how I got in service. First thing my sponsor told me, before we even started working the steps, he said, I want you here early, at least 30 minutes early. And I want you to turn the lights out when we leave. That means you stay till it's over. I didn't see how that was going to help me, but that's what I did. I did exactly what he told me to do. He told me, and you know what? I could get there at 7 o'clock. Our meeting started at 8 o'clock. I could get there at 7 o'clock. He always beat me. Always. So, see, he wasn't telling me something that he hadn't done. He was showing me what he had done. Now, that's 20-some-odd years ago. We smoked in the meetings back then. So you know what I did. I cleaned ashtrays. You know, I made sure that the coffee cups were put up. I turned the light out when we left. That's how I got started in service. You know, now since then I've gotten what I call formal service, and that's, you know, that's, any of y'all been to an area assembly or anything, y'all know you got to keep the tolerator wound up pretty good. But that's how I started. You know, just showing up early, prepared to stay late. Well, after about 3 years, I didn't want to see another woman. I didn't want to date another woman. I didn't want to be involved with any women. I didn't want no part of women, period. I had plenty to do on my own. When I was 10 years old, I met this girl, and I don't know exactly what it is, but whatever it is, she and I had it. And when we got old enough to date, she was the first girl I ever dated. She was the first girl I ever kissed. All of my life, for 30 years, we always kept in touch. Now, in high school, she treated me pretty badly. She She played me like a fiddle. You know, she'd break up with me and then get back with me and break up and get back, break up and get back. And I said to myself, she moved off to Minnesota. And so that kind of split us up for good after that. And I said to myself, I'll never let another woman treat me like she did. Never. And I took that to heart because I treated every woman after that like dogs. And I'm very ashamed of that. But 3 years after I came to this program, she called me. She said, hey, I'm moving. I wonder if you could help me move. And that was truth. I told her, no, my mom's birthday is this weekend. As a matter of fact, it was my mom's birthday is tomorrow. So it was right around this time. And I said, no, I can't. I got a birthday party to go to for my mom. So, well, a week later, she calls me back. She said, look, Philip, I got one piece of furniture I need to move. Could you please help me move this piece of furniture? She said, I got another guy that's going to help us. You just come over. We'll go over, get the piece of furniture. We'll bring it back to the apartment. That'll be it. And I said, okay, I'll do that. Well, went and got the piece of furniture, brought it back. We had a good time. No problem. Everything went smooth. I went home. Another week passed. She says, she calls me. She says, hey, I really appreciate you helping me move that piece of furniture. Would you come? I want to cook dinner for you and Brock is the fellow's name that was helping. Well, for you and Brock. Would you come over to the house? I'll fix supper for you. I said, well, okay. Brock didn't show. And I don't know why I did this. I don't have a clue. I told you we had it. I got to her door. She opened up the door. She came, and she was standing there. I kissed her right square on the lips. And a year later, we were married. I do that a lot. If you're keeping count, that's number 3 so far. Now, she had 3 girls. One of those girls had a baby. 3 teenage girls. Kind of makes you shiver, don't it? I had 2 teenage boys and 2 boys that were 7, 8, 9 years old. So that's 8 kids all in one house. And no, I know what you're thinking. It was not the Brady Bunch. She used to say, we put the funk in dysfunctional. The oldest was a heroin addict. The oldest girl. The middle girl was crazy. I mean, I don't know other way to put it. She was just crazy. The youngest girl was an alcoholic. I don't know. This is by their own admission. I don't know about my oldest son. If he's not an alcoholic, he really needs to be, because that would make him, that would explain a whole lot. And for the next 7 years, I found myself living again in active alcoholism. We got married in June. In August, the youngest girl got raped while she was drunk on the beach. Christmas Eve, her daddy had a massive heart attack, and on New Year's Day, he died. The following February, the oldest daughter tried to kill herself. Then my oldest son ran away. Then my second to the oldest son, at the age of 16, got a girl pregnant, and he ran away. I didn't see either one of them for many years after that. Our house was filled with alcoholism. And it really played havoc on our family. Now, I didn't really know exactly what to do, except keep coming to see y'all. And that's what I did. I just kept coming. Put one foot in front of the other. I sponsored my guys. I suited up and showed up, and I kept walking. It was hard. Our life was spent constantly being barraged, one thing after the other. It's always some kind of, not little bitty problem, some kind of catastrophic problem. You know, you don't have a girl try to kill herself in your house and it not be catastrophic. We had to have her stomach pumped and all this stuff, you know. And I, by the time, 7 years later, for Christmas one year, I got a divorce for a present. And she just couldn't take it. You know, it was just more than what, it was just more than, you know. I can't say I didn't do right or she didn't do right. I don't know what happened. I just know that alcoholism tore our family to pieces. That's all I know. Now, it wasn't that she didn't love me, and it wasn't that I didn't love her. It was that alcohol had us, and it wouldn't let us go. I don't really know exactly what her motivation was in leaving me. I just know that she did. And I'm going to tell you, it hurt. Because I love that woman. I really did. And it hurt. And I also will tell you that there was a part of me that said, you know what? To hell with it. I mean, I was doing everything that I was supposed to do. I was suiting up and showing up. I was getting there early. I was staying late. I was going to area assembly. I was going to my district meeting. I was going to my business meetings. I had sponsors. I had guys I was sponsoring. I was doing everything that I was supposed to be doing. Why, God, does this supposed to? This is not supposed to happen to somebody like me, doing the things that I do. And it was difficult. It was very difficult for me. But see, this is what I knew. I knew I didn't want to go back to that psychiatric ward. That's not a fun place. And I knew that without you, that's where I was headed. Now, I wasn't really sure exactly why these things were happening to me. I wasn't really sure exactly what the end result was going to be, how I was going to make it through this. I knew that if I was with you and if you were with me and I was willing, that God would take care of me. That much I knew. You know, one of the greatest gifts my sponsor told me was that these steps, they're not an event. They're not a series of questions and answers that you work like a test. And when you get through, that's the end of it. It's a set of spiritual principles that you implement in your life. So that when, not if, when bad things happen, when you do stupid stuff, there's a way for you to get out of it. That you don't have to go back. You don't have to go back. It's fairly simple. I'm sorry. It's fairly easy. I want y'all to listen to what I'm telling you. It's pretty easy to see when an alcoholic drinks. I mean, that's when an alcoholic is not implementing these principles in their life, what happens to them? I mean, we heard it last night. I mean, you either implement them or you drink. That's what happens to a real alcoholic. I'm not one, but I know enough of them to know that that's what happens. Well, those of us that don't have that physical allergy, sometimes it takes a while, and it's subtle, and it kills you from the inside out, and you rationalize and justify, and you think, well, it's not that bad, you know, I'm gonna be okay. It's really not, you know, man, I've been going to these meetings for 22 years. I'm tired of going to meetings. I know what they're gonna say. You know, I've been going to the same meeting with the same people for 22 years. There is nothing that they've said that I hadn't heard already. Nothing. I don't really feel like going. It ain't about feeling like going. See, because that's where the power's at. In my little Al-Anon group, that's where the power is. That's where I found the power that I needed so that I don't have to go back to that psychiatric ward. I don't want to go back there. So 7 years later, she said I had enough, and it really hurt. And I had a hard time for a long time. And I really, really doubted. I'll tell you, I doubted whether this program, I don't know why. Isn't that stupid? Today I think, well, why? How could I think that? But, it, you know, when you hurt, that's what happens. But see, I had a good sponsor. And he loved me. And he stood by me. And he cared about me. And he knew me. And he loved me. And I knew if I didn't show up, he was coming after me. There for a while, we had a little, wasn't an Al-Anon meeting. Y'all don't misunderstand me. I love Al-Anon. I love everything there is about it. There are things I don't like about it. I love it too. I love Al-Anon. I love AA. I love everything about AA. I don't know everything there is to know about AA, but I love AA. I respect Al-Anon. I respect AA. And for that reason, I don't bring a big book into my meeting. Never have, and I never will. But when I'm outside of that meeting, I'm free to read and be and do whatever I want to. So there was a bunch of us, both AA and Al-Anon. We'd get together not every week, but every once in a while, we'd have big book study. So it was not an Al-Anon meeting. It was not an AA meeting. It was just a bunch of guys sitting around studying the big book, because that's where the solution to our problem came from. And I already told you, he shows up early, always. Well, I had it at my house. He showed up. He just happened to show up the night that I got my divorce papers. So I was sitting at my desk, read my divorce papers. He walks in and I hand them to him. He looks at them. He folds them back up and hands them to me. He says, "You got 3 minutes." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You got 3 minutes." He said, "You can bellyache, moan, cry, talk about how bad you had it, and wail, and do all you need to do for 3 minutes. At the end of that 3 minutes, I'm done. If you want to carry on, you carry on. And you can go just as far as you want to go. When you get through, I'm going to be right here." It's the kind of sponsor I got. So I knew that even though I didn't understand what was going on or why it is these things were happening to me, I knew where my solution lied, and that was with you. And so I kept coming. I kept coming. I kept coming. It took a long time for me. for a long time. I did some stupid stuff. You know, stuff that my sponsor knows about today. Why he didn't fire me, I don't know. But he didn't. He loved me anyhow. I did some really stupid stuff. And it took a long time for me to get my feet back on the ground. But that's not mine. But I did. I'm kind of a, not so much now. I used to be a computer geek. I built my own computers and I fooled around with them all the time. And, you know, I like computers. Well, one of the things that I tried to do, I ain't going to go into a whole lot, but one of the things I decided I was going to do was I was going to find me a good woman. That was my problem. I was picking out bad women. Now, if you're keeping count, I'd already been through three. And here's the two things that are in common with all three of them. Me, and they left. But my mind always goes to it's their fault, not mine. It's always somebody else's fault. It ain't mine. It can't be my fault. Look at me. Look at what I do. I show up early. I stay late. I got pigeons. I go to serve. I mean, it ain't me. It's them. Got to be them. Can't be me. Got to be them. I'm not even good at dating. Any better at dating than I am at being married. I pretty much suck at it. So, finally, I just said, you know what? I ain't going to do none of it. I'm not going to do any of it. But I met this girl online, lived in Pennsylvania. I went to Buffalo, and she met me in Buffalo, and we met, and we had a good time, you know, and we became good friends. That's all we were, was good friends. Now, she had been married for 34 years to the same man, and he ran off with another woman. And she lived in this little town, an hour and a half south of Erie, Pennsylvania. Now, I don't know if y'all know where that is, but if you're in Erie and you're heading west and turn right, guess where you're at? Canada. It's a long ways up there. Well, she worked for Lowe's. And she worked for Lowe's. And she wanted to get out of that little town. She had five kids. The good news is that four of them was grown and gone. And the youngest one wanted to live with his daddy. So, she wanted to get out of that little town. Well, her boss, and I won't say that it was a conspiracy, but her boss found out about a job at a Lowe's in Birmingham, Alabama. And without her knowing it, he put her in for that job. Well, when they called her, and she called me, and she said, now, she didn't know a single, she was born in New Hampshire, had moved to California, then up to Oregon, then to Pennsylvania. She didn't know what okra was. She don't know what cornbread is. She never heard of butter beans. She never heard of black-eyed peas. She was in bad shape. So she calls me and she says, Philip, Lowe's has offered me a job. Can I come down and stay with you to interview with this job? I said, Robin, if you're coming down here for me, you're coming for the wrong reason. She said, I'm not coming down there for you. I got I'm getting out of this town, and I got to go somewhere. Alabaster, Alabama is about as good a place as any. She got the job. She got married when she was 17. For 34 years, she lived with a man. So she never lived on her own. She moved out of the house that they were living in to Alabaster, Alabama. First time she ever lived by herself, ever. So she came down. I got her an apartment for her. Would you trust me? I wouldn't either. But she really didn't have any choice but to trust me because she didn't know anybody. But I picked her out an apartment, you know, and I flew up there and drove the truck from Erie, Pennsylvania, all the way down here. That was a long ways. Got her all moved in. You know, after about a year, she bought her a little house. And we just got to be good friends, really good friends. Christmas, Easter, July 4th, she had no family down here, so she just come with us to my family's house. By then, they had started talking to me. And she would just come, and my family loved her. And we got to be really, really good friends. Never had a single solitary argument. You know, I dated around. She dated around. She almost got married one time. And I kind of helped her get out of that. And when I did, her mother loved me from then on. I had it made. I could do no wrong after that. But we were just really good friends. Well, one day, I have no idea where we're going or what we were doing. Now, she's not in Avalon. She's not in AA. One day, we was riding along, and I said, Robin, I said, this is stupid. She said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you love me, don't you? She said, well, yeah. And I said, you know what? I love you, too. I said, we need to get married. And we did. Now, when I get in my car and I drive home tomorrow afternoon, if she's there when I get there, I'll have another day, mate. We're still married today. That was about 5.5 years ago. You know, and today I don't live in active alcoholism. I don't have to deal with an alcoholic one. The closest I get to drinking is when I go to the chicken wing place. And they're drinking beer, watching football. That's as close as I come to anybody drinking. But when I got here, it wasn't about her. It wasn't about her drinking. And I'm here today, and it ain't about them, and it ain't about their drinking. This is about Philip. Let me tell you something. This program changed my life. And y'all have given me things I never would have ever in a million, billion years ever believed that I could have. It's not. Today I got the best job I ever had. I make more money than I ever have, lived in the best house I ever lived in, in the nicest neighborhood I ever lived in. I got a good life today. But y'all gave me so much more. That means nothing compared to what y'all gave me. I love this program. I want y'all to know that. If y'all don't know nothing else, I want you to know that I love this program with everything in me. And one of the great joys that I have is to be able to tell other people just how much I do. So I hope that you love this program as much as I do. I hope that you want everything that this program has to give you. This program has a lot to give us, a lot. And if we're going to go halfway, we're going to get halfway. We don't have to settle for halfway. The solution is numbered 1 through 12. those steps going to give us everything that we need, everything. And for that, I'm so very grateful. And I appreciate y'all letting me share today.